should start each teisho with the statement, "Dear Bodhisattvas and Mahasattvas." So I want to read to you from the Hekigan Roku. This is a koan. It's koan number 97. It's very late in the book. It's only the fourth from the end. And in our particular school, although we do go through many more koan than this, and I hope you all enter this koan treasury with me, this is the Hekigan Roku is the final book that is the requirement, the basic requirement for the training of a Zen student who has come to awakening and has gone through the most key koan. This comes near the very end. And when I read it to you, it's deceptively simple, and it seems very basic. But it's actually the core of our practice, and it's not so simple. So let me read it to you. So the title of this koan is The Diamond Sutra and Being Reviled. And it goes like this. It's a short, simple, direct case. The Diamond Sutra says, one who is reviled by others has done wicked acts in former lifetimes, which doom him or her to fall into evil worlds. But because of the scorn and vilification by others in the present life, the transgressions in the former life are wiped out. Why is this here? What is its deep importance? Now, it's easy enough to understand this. It's basic Buddhist teaching. What goes around comes around. The world is a fabric of karma. Actions that we commit have consequences. Sometimes these consequences are immediate. You're inattentive and you accidentally put your hand on a hot element on a stove and you burn it immediately. Ow! And sometimes the consequences seem disconnected from anything going on in the present moment. And yet, it's all connected. It's all a fabric. Nothing happens by, quote, accident. But what does this really mean? If we see it just on this level, it is useful. One might say, well, I'll never do that again, or I better be very careful about my words and speech, because if I make a mistake, there'll be a painful consequence. And that's not inappropriate. It's certainly how we need to conduct ourselves in the world of human beings, in the so-called nirmanakaya, where we need to be attentive, wholehearted, compassionate. But why is this the 97th koan in the Hekigan Roku? Wouldn't this be like the very first koan and the Mumonkan, really? Or second? Second koan is about karma. Hayakaju's fox. Master was asked by a student, is the enlightened person subject to karma or free of karma? And he said, well, the enlightened person is free of karma, and then was compelled to be reborn for 100 lifetimes as a wild fox. That was the second koan in the two critical books in the training of a Zen student. And this is the fourth from the last. I'll read it one more time. The Diamond Sutra says, one who is reviled by others has done wicked acts in former lifetimes, which doom him or her to fall into evil worlds. But because of the scorn and vilification by others in the present life, the transgressions in the former life are wiped out. When we approach these koan, there's definitely a view, I would call a view from above, meaning the words of the koan and how we understand those in the ordinary sense, and it's not unimportant to beginning to work with a koan. But koan are very different than just morality stories or puzzles, word puzzles. Koans also have to be approached from below, looking up at. So looking above down is using the knowing part of yourself, the figuring out, the mind part of yourself. Looking from below is a different approach. It's going deep inside, deep questioning. What can this possibly really mean? Now, by this point, student understands, hopefully, that on the human level, certainly there are individuals and bodies and interactions and relationships. But in the truth level, there are no separated individualities. There's no past or future. There's not even a present. There's just this, just this. The notion of a transgression, like something was done wrong, shouldn't have happened. That's only a thinking description. Is it really possible to transgress? Against what rule? Where are the rules written? Now, in our ordinary everyday life in the Nirmanakaya, the world of action and human relationships, we strategize. We try to make things better. We consider things that we've done. We draw up dividing lines in order to have a world that is understandable by the intellectual mind so that we can get certain tasks done. And none of this is bad. This is how you survive in the human world, in this Nirmanakaya world. There's no other way around it. And as Zen students, we have the clarity of mind and the wholeheartedness, and hopefully the developing compassion to do this in a way that doesn't cause harm and that optimizes outcomes. But how do you liberate yourself this way? How are we liberated from the sense of standing apart, manipulating the world, trying for outcomes, specific outcomes, feeling disappointed when they don't happen, feeling scorned by others, feeling vilified, feeling disappointed. Now, the Buddha talked about the three marks of existence. The Buddha said that existence, meaning everything that you can possibly see, hear, feel, taste, touch, and know, has three aspects, three dimensions. The first one is dukkha, the second is anicca, and the third is anatta. So to translate these Sanskrit words, dukkha means suffering. Anicca is impermanence. And anatta is no self. That's the way it is. How refreshing. No need for any magical thinking. No need for any beliefs. All you have to do is open your eyes and observe. So, if that's the case, why do we fight against it? Why do we constantly, as ordinary, in our ordinary state as a human being, struggle? Fight against? Get all tied up and wound up and enthralled with trying to prevent dukkha, to hold on to what we want to stay, that we want, that we like, which is to misunderstand anicca, impermanence. So we try to get rid of this dukkha, try to hold on to what we want. We all try to do that. That's just the human condition. But this practice is about liberation. It's about freedom. That's not freedom. That's being caught by the events of your daily life. Remember what Wang Po said, he said to his monks, he said, do not allow the events of your daily life to bind you. Isn't that being bound by the events of your daily life? And then he said, following that, but never withdraw yourself from them. So how do we not withdraw ourselves from this world, yet not be bound by it? So the Buddha pointed directly to what is, to actuality, not to belief, not to constructs, not to strategies, directly. So when we get it directly, that this is a fabric of karma, that everything is working its way out in the only possible way it can, then we can allow even painful things to be in the space of our awareness, because we don't need to struggle against them. We don't need to fight them. They're inevitable. Therefore, they're incomparable. Therefore, they're absolute. This is a 180-degree switch. This is seeing this koan from underneath, not from above. From above, I better not do that again. I better watch my step or something bad's going to happen. From underneath, everything manifesting in this moment, including those things so difficult to accept, so habitual, so painful. And the little things in life that trip us up, that cause discomfort, that frustrate us, if we see them all as the inevitable outcome of a fabric of space-time working itself out, then we are free to look at it in a fresh way, just as it is, just. As long as we're caught up in analyzing it, struggling against it, rationalizing it, justifying it, making the argument left and right in our minds, back and forth, we can't do this kind of plunging into, which, remember, is the very definition of Zen. The very definition of Zen is the word dhyana, which means absorption. How can you absorb yourself in this fabric of reality, two of its aspects that cannot be escaped? Are dukkha and anicca, suffering and impermanence. If you're struggling against them, you can't absorb yourself. So this koan just goes to the worst possible thing that could happen to anybody. It's interesting. At the time that I worked on this koan, I was in a position like this. I was working in a hospital system. I was the chief of an ER. I was reporting on safety events. I became targeted, and I became a safety whistleblower. And it was a very difficult experience. There was scorn. There was vilification. And then here comes this koan. One who is reviled by others has done wicked acts. Boy, I must really deserve this. And through the vilification, the transgressions are wiped out. Well, how are they wiped out? How? How do you wipe it out? How do you wipe out any, what is the most essential transgression? The single core, the essential transgression in Zen is the dividing line between me and the world. The creation of an entity standing apart, peering out at a foreign world, totally separate from me. That's the core transgression. Remember what the sixth patriarch said. He said, when others do wrong, I am at fault. When I do wrong, I alone am at fault. There's no dividing line here. If I make the notion in my mind of others outside, I am at fault. I did that. I carved that gash into the single fabric of reality. So when I understand that the way things work out, as painful as they are part of a fabric of karma going back to the very beginning and extending throughout space and time, that go way beyond any notion of separate entities, that is the only way things can work out right now. I've wiped out that transgression. It's wiped out. It's one fabric. This is where we start our zazen, not where we finish it. It's where we started. The world exactly as it is, and ourselves exactly as we are, and every person in our lives exactly as they are, and our relationships exactly as they are, is the very core of our practice, as it is. This is how we wipe out transgressions. Now we are free to observe reality rather than struggle against it, to experience the actuality of our senses, thoughts, feelings, as they unfold in our state of absorption called zazen, without analyzing them, without fighting against them, without justifying them, without going, woe is me, why me? Now we can start to work with them. And how do you work with them? Remember, it's zazen, it's sitting absorption. You allow them. You allow this world of karma. In a sense, you surrender to it. You submit to it. It's the surrendering to things as they are that is the wiping out of the transgression of a dividing line between me and the world. Me and my ideas, my sense of being beset upon, my wanting to have things be other than they are, all of that. In the Shinjin Ming, which was written by the third Zen patriarch, and which is, and this particular part of it, is a favorite quote of Joshu, the great Zen master Joshu. The very first koan in the Mumon Kan, the koan Mu, is all about what Joshu said to a monk. And this line is very simple. It's, the great way is not difficult. Only let go of picking and choosing. Great way, this way of liberation, of full awakening, the way that the Buddha found liberation, is not difficult. Just let go of picking and choosing. So we start with this difficulty, this dukkha, this impermanence. It's all around us, it's in our own lives. This is what tends to block us, the struggle against it, the fighting with it, the analyzing it. We wrap our arms around it. We submit to it because it is absolute. It could not have been any different. And then we can work with it. And we allow it. We give it its moment in the sunshine of our awareness. And this is the beginning of dhyana, which is the meaning of the word Zen, which is absorption. Now we can begin to, as I sometimes say, flip it over. Flip it over. See the side that's hidden because of the enthrallment with the particulars and our resistance to those particulars, our struggling with the particulars, wanting to hold on to the good things in spite of anicca, wanting to push away the bad things in spite of dukkha. Now we can begin to wipe out that dividing line. Remember, the third mark of existence is anatta, no self, no dividing line. We can begin to wipe that out when we're not struggling against the first two marks of existence, when we can wrap our arms around it, when we can permit it, when we can submit to the actuality of our karma. Now I'm saying on the sitting cushion, in the world in Ramanakaya, there are things we need to do. There's struggles we go through. There's difficulties. We do that wholeheartedly, and we do it within a broader understanding coming from our practice. People attracted to this practice are not the same people who find it very easily to work things out, or who believe totally that through the action of will, I can change things to make them the way I want them. Someone like that would not be attracted to this practice. There has to be a sense of something's lacking. I don't know what it is. But I have this faith that there's a way to work it out. But it's not through the ordinary, all the things I've tried, they've never done it. I've accumulated these good things that didn't make me happy. I fought against all the things I didn't want, but I couldn't stop them. What is this life all about? And I don't want to end up with a belief system. I can't accept that. It just doesn't feel real. It's that person that's attracted to this practice. And it's that person that this koan is speaking to. So, I want to pick up another koan here to move into this direction of wrapping your arms around it so that you can begin to work with it and flip it over. So this is koan number 32 from the Mumon Kan, and the title of this is A Non-Buddhist Questions the Buddha. And the case goes like this. A non-Buddhist once asked the world-honored one, "I do not ask for words. I do not ask for silence." The world-honored one sat quietly. The non-Buddhist said admiringly, "The compassion of the world-honored one has dispelled the clouds of my illusion and has enabled me to become enlightened." Making a deep bow of gratitude, he departed. Ananda, who was nearby, then asked the Buddha, "What was it the non-Buddhist realized that he so praised you?" The world-honored one replied, "A high-class horse moves at even the shadow of a whip." Even the shadow. So there's a commentary to this before we go into it a little more in more detail. So the commentary goes like this. Ananda was the Buddha's disciple, but his understanding was nothing like that of the non-Buddhist. How different are they, the Buddha's disciple and the non-Buddhist? And the verse goes, walking along the edge of a sword. Sometimes it's translated, climbing a mountain of swords in your bare feet. Running over jagged ice. You need take no steps. Let go your hold on the cliff. So this non-Buddhist, this is someone who has gone beyond any identification with a belief system, with a religion, all the trappings of being a Zen student, all of it, any sense of being special, different. This is someone who is beginning to embrace all those difficulties, the transgressions, everything, gets that part, isn't special, ordinary human being. Goes to the Buddha. And these are not, this is not an idle question. This is a question from the very core of this individual. This is the deepest aspect of this individual, their essence, their heart asking this question. I do not ask for words. I do not ask for silence. And the world-honored one sat quietly. And then the non-Buddhist said, "Thank you for enlightening me." What did he realize? What line was wiped out? How did self drop away? The Buddha just sat quietly. Now the mind wants to figure it out. Let's see. The Buddha must have been emanating something, and they locked eyes and he got it. Mind tries to figure it out. But the koan pushes us in a direction. And I'll read this verse again. I think the verse really is a key to the essence of what this means to our practice. Climbing a mountain of swords in your bare feet. Running over jagged ice. You need take no steps. Let go your hold on the cliff. This world as it is, with all its difficulties. All the ways in which we trip ourselves up, all the ways in which we create our own suffering, all of it exactly as it is. Let go your hold on the edge of this cliff. Don't hold on to any idea about it. any manipulation of it, any resistance of it. This is like climbing a mountain of swords in your bare feet. It's each moment, moment by moment. This is the spirit of our Zazen. This is the kind of passion that we bring to it. Plunging into this world as it presents, exactly as it presents. If the practice on our cushion is breath, it's just breath. I'm letting go my hold on the edge of this cliff. I'm plunging into just this breath, as it is. What is it showing me? What is it manifesting? You need take no steps, no steps. Nothing to figure out. It's already done. Just this. Just this. When you let go of your hold on this cliff, the divining line is wiped out, and it's just this. Just this world we live in, with all its difficulties, all its struggles. When we no longer fight it, analyze it, struggle against it, hold on to parts of it that we want to stay, then we're free to become absorbed in it, absorbed by it. This is that surrender side. This is that letting go into. Every little thing then manifests yourself. Every sound manifests you. Every feeling manifests you. Every emotion manifests you. All of it is just you. As Dogen said, using yourself to experience the dharmas of the world, the various elements of experience, using yourself is ignorance. Using the coming of the myriad dharmas, all the different things that anyone could possibly experience, pain, joy, sounds, feelings, using those to experience yourself is enlightenment. The Buddha sat quietly. The non-Buddhist got it. Just this. Only this. This is climbing a mountain of swords in your bare feet. It's ow, 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 just this, just this. That's the spirit of Zazen. Now we can be the dumbest person on earth. We can be totally flabbergasted by our koan. We can be struggling like, I just have no... But if we bring this spirit to our Zazen, we are already there. There's nowhere else to go. You need to take no steps. No steps need be taken. Just. Now Moses went to Mount Sinai and climbed a mountain of swords in his bare feet. He was abandoned, was found by a maid, in a wicker basket flowing down the river, and rescued, and then became a leader, and suffered terrible deprivations under the pharaohs, and saw his people suffering and dying. And he went to Mount Sinai to directly contact God and climbed a mountain of swords in his bare feet. And when he got there in trepidation and fear, in awe, trembling probably, he said to God, "What is your name? What is your naked face?" And God said, "I am that I am. That." The car sound is that. The incense is that. Just that. Everything is expressing that. As God said, I am that I am. Am-ness. That-ness. Everything is expressing this fact. This fact is what? What is this fact? This fact is the real you, the true you, the actual you. Not any idea. You need take no steps. Now, the mind may want to turn that into an idea, but remember, you have to run along the edge of the ice. You have to climb a mountain of swords in your bare feet. You have to be in this, plunged in it. Don't separate. Don't try to figure it out. It's just this actual experience. You bring this spirit to your zazen, and you will be exactly like that non-Buddhist. You need take no steps. And then all the transgressions are wiped out in the blink of an eye. Wiped out. And the world remains just exactly as it is. Remember that koan, the 97 koan. All these things that happen in the world, all this difficulty, struggle, stress, is that. That. I no longer need to analyze it, figure it out, struggle against it. I will submit to it, meaning plunge into the actual present moment, climbing this sword in my bare feet and seeing that. It's fact. Everything is showing you that. No steps needed. We'll end there today.